Hello, welcome to the Higher Education Researcher. This is a podcast by the Center for Higher Education Research and Evaluation at Lancaster University. My name is Janja Komjenović, and my guest today is Olga Rotar. Olga is a doctoral researcher at the program Educational Research, Independent Study, and a member of our research center. Normally, she is on the other side of this conversation, interviewing our guest speakers, but this time, Olga will present her own work. That's really exciting. Welcome and thanks for agreeing to be on the other side, Olga.
Thank you for this opportunity, Janja.
So today we will talk about Olga's doctoral research. It's my understanding that Olga is just about to submit her thesis, so she's toward the end of her studies. And in her study, Olga provides an explanation of alternative ways of experiencing online learning by adult learners. She finds that there is a great variation in their experience. Olga argues that the conceptualization of success in online programs should be reconsidered. Specifically, she says that what counts as success should not only include formal measures of academic outcomes, but other outcomes which are valued by adult learners. So Olga, could you tell us what your study is about in sort of lay terms, and how did you come to research this issue in the first place?
Yes, thanks, Janja. I look at the differences in adult learners' experiences and perceptions in two online programs at one UK university and its partner institution in Russia. I specifically explore the qualitative variations in how my participants reflect on their online learning experience and what is success for them. And I was also interested to see whether there are any relationships between these two phenomena. And I wanted to research this topic for a number of reasons. The first one was my professional interest in understanding the dropout phenomena in online higher education and how to better support students who often have multiple commitments and responsibilities. Secondly, I wanted to understand why, despite of the proffered benefits of online education, such as flexibility and openness, for example, the literature shows that adult learners face various challenges when adapting to it. And when looking at the literature more closely, I found that despite of the claims that online education provides an inclusive environment, those claims, first of all, are not supported by enough evidence. And secondly, although there were numerous support strategies developed for online students, the high dropout rates in online education still remains a high-level concern among many stakeholders. I learned that although experiences and perceptions of adult students have been discussed in the past, little attention has been paid to the differences that existed among learners in terms of, for example, what do they emphasize when they talk about their online learning experience, or what are the learning outcomes that they anticipate. My study aimed to address this gap. Not only I was interested in exploring these differences, I also wanted to uncover the nature of existing variations, and therefore to gain a more expanded understanding of the online learning phenomena based on multiple and often dismissed perspectives.
Great, thank you. So, yes, indeed, adult learners are often taken as a homogeneous group in this sense, right? So not is they not as a very kind of diverse, very, very different, let's say, kinds of needs that they have and also who they are.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, there is a lot of debates on diversity of adult learners' profiles in the literature. But when it comes to the actual investigation, that diversity kind of dismissed. Scholars tend to oversimplify the population, and oversimplification is shaped by historical assumptions about adult learners.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I guess this will be especially important with this kind of what I like to call lifelong learning 2.0, in the sense that, you know, there is kind of increased focus on lifelong learning and in particular just-in-time learning and the kind of online opportunities where you have really this kind of diverse needs and population, especially in the global perspective. So the providers will also have to then adjust to these different needs of diverse adult populations in plural.
Yeah, you're right. They need to understand who their students are, where they're coming from, and what are their needs.
Okay. So why do you focus on adult learners at all? I mean, how does understanding the experiences and perceptions of adult study population in online higher education, for example, or let's say, you know, education and training, differ to any other groups of population? So how are adults different?
Mm-hmm. So adult learners still represent the largest percentage of online higher education demographic. And I believe that when we look at multiple perspectives or multiple aspects of their learning experience, there is a potential to gain insights into how to improve existing model of online higher education and how to design online courses that are more inclusive of learners' diverse needs and perceptions. And when I was looking at different support models for online learners, I could see that they are still influenced by adult learning theories, which is not surprising because traditionally the main target group for corresponding and distant programs were adults. And with a widening participation agenda, online population has been represented mainly by students who are usually older than those enrolling into campus-based programs, who have different socioeconomic backgrounds, often have family with kids and usually hold full-time jobs. So this is not surprising why the support models shaped by adult learning theories. A recently emerged discussion on the diversity of adult students emphasized dramatic differences that exist among this population in regard to their preparedness for online learning, in regard to their time spent away from formal learning, in terms of individual differences, perceptions, needs, expectations. These differences in many dimensions of adult learners' profiles, perhaps the main reason why I distinguish them from other populations. Yet acknowledging these differences is one thing, but taking them into account is another. And there is still lack of research that specifically focuses on in-depth investigation of variations, how learners perceive their online education. And that's why in my research, I employ the diversity principle, which means that my methodology, my methods and data interpretation processes are directed towards uncovering those variations in learners' experience and adult learners' experiences that has been previously dismissed. My motivation for focusing on adult learners specifically was based on my belief that educational practice of online higher education should be informed by research that acknowledges learners' differences and considers the variety that exists among them. The aspiration of online higher education of being open, accessible, and supportive could be only realized with an inclusion of the multiple and often conflicting perspectives and voices.
Great, thank you. So you've mentioned adult learning theories. Could you maybe summarize for our listeners what are the main, what are they about or what are the main messages? And do they include this variety perspective that you talked about or not? Or basically, how do you relate to these adult learning theories that are normally applied in research?
So one of the theories that I use in my study is called andragogy. And this theory provides a set of principles or assumptions that distinguish adults from other students' groups. According to this theory, adults are more self-directed. They tend to bring prior learning experience into their learning. And it also assumes that adults are intrinsically motivated and ready to learn. So in my study, I showed that it is not necessarily true for all adults and that there might be different degrees of self-directions within one learning group and even within one individual at different stages of their learning. Especially at those stages that involve change of the routine and lack of clarity. And eventually, I offered similar examples in regard to other assumptions by just describing differences in the nature of variation, adult learners' awareness of their learning and its potential benefits, in terms of readiness to accept educational goals, and other differences.
So you've already brought in, I suppose, some findings of your research, but still, I'm curious, how would you summarize your main findings of your research project?
Yes, thank you, Yanya. I identified three qualitatively different ways in which my participants experience their online learning. First, online learning has been seen as an investment with a focus on meeting course requirements in order to gain a return on investment in the future, and of course with some costs of investment involved. Secondly, online learning has been seen as a process that brings structure with a focus on realization that online learning environment is actually a unique habitus that impacts not only learning, but also multiple dimensions of students' life. And here there are three subcategories: learning structures life routine, learning structures work and professional communication, and learning structures knowledge and past experience. And lastly, online learning has been seen as a process that empowers and enables these two subcategories here, in terms of professional thinking and in terms of individual transformation. The change within each theme explains how learners' awareness was expanding from the category 1 to the category 3 and how the context within which the experience has been described was shifting. In their conceptualization of success, adult students as a group showed the progression from a more simplistic way of perceiving success, success as an achievement measured by formal criteria, to the next level, success in the form of better life and work opportunities, and opportunity to join the elite community of learners. The next level was success as an improvement in one's work. Then there was success as understanding in action. And lastly, success has been associated with self-actualization. A hierarchically inclusive structure of these different ways of perceiving success showed that different perspectives are not mutually exclusive, and that a more complex and more emancipatory perspective on success, success as self-actualization, was actually able to embrace all more simplistic ones. And therefore, it doesn't mean that the students who perceive success in a more powerful way do not value high grades and degree certificates. Rather, their focus and expectations from the learning process went beyond the neoliberal meritocratic frame and was directed towards personal development and self-actualization. Therefore, in my work, I argue that higher education institutions can and should offer to their students more than an access to the opportunity to gain a degree in order to achieve on the labor market, but also they could support individuals' needs and their tendency for growth and development.
Thank you. This is especially so since the online higher education gives global reach anyway. So you already mentioned that universities should do more than provide access to opportunities. So what advice would you give to universities and policymakers about how to organize and regulate online learning?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Yanya. I would like to emphasize 4 points. The first one is a promotion of high-level learning experiences that lead to high-level learning outcomes. Although the results of my study cannot be generalized, they provide a good example of how adult learners' understanding of their learning can progress and how the context within which they experience learning can shift. And this information can be used by course designers to improve online courses in terms of promoting a more powerful ways of experiencing learning and assisting learners' progression from one level to another one. Unique ways of integration of learning into my study participants' lives appear to be an important element in their learning experience, and it was a preceding step before reaching an awareness of learning as an enabling and empowering mechanism. So the next recommendation would be to pay attention to transition points and to structure online learning courses in a way that ensures a smooth transition. Specifically, I suggest educators to pay attention to those transitional points that involve change of the routine and that lacking clarity, because the lack of experience in these transitional points may cause a feeling of frustration or rejection, as it happened with 2 of my study participants who associated learning with a nightmare and a chaos. The provided scaffolding can assist students in internalization of educational goals and to support their move to more powerful ways of experiencing learning. The first suggestion would be to make these processes embedded into the curriculum, embedded environment that nourishes individual, and embedded support. Support models which contains motivational and nourishing elements and scaffolding structures should be integrated into the curriculum. And I suggest that the supporting individual adult might involve reconsideration of how and at which intervention points different elements of support are applied within a program, and how the program can offer flexibility to explore alternative contexts and to negotiate alternative outcomes. Lastly, a high level of awareness of academic success comes with an understanding that the learner can grow and develop through the learning process. I suggest educators see the concept of academic success as a multi-layered construct and therefore develop multidimensional assessment instruments, and in general to be more careful about how they judge students to be successful or not.
Okay, thank you, Olga. And my final question is for those out there who are interested in methodology. You employ phenomenography in your research, so very briefly, if you could just introduce what it is, what is phenomenography, why did you use it, and what challenges did you encounter by using this particular approach?
Phenomenography is closely associated with an interest in higher education, and particularly in the student's learning experience. And the aim of phenomenographic research is to identify differences, identify variations in how people understand a certain phenomena. And as I was interested in examining qualitative differences that existed among my study participants, among adult learners, that methodology worked very well for my study. It was the most appropriate approach, actually. But apart from general alignment of phenomenography with study objectives, there were also other reasons for choosing this approach. In particular, a second-order perspective in looking at the phenomena was very close to me. I like the idea of giving adult students voices to speak for themselves. A major challenge for me was to deal with unstructured data, because individual interview was quite unique in terms of the structure, and I needed to untwist those intertwined elements and concepts. So to make this process more explicit, I employed different frameworks, and one of the framework was reflective practice framework. Different frameworks allowed me to actually be more comfortable in dealing with that approach. So that was my main strategic approach.
Okay. Thank you very much, Olga, for presenting your very interesting research project, and good luck with finishing your thesis, and most of all, good luck with your future research.
Thank you very much, and it was great to be on the other side, and I'm very grateful for this opportunity, and thank you very much for the interesting questions.